The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Well, it's very lovely to be here with so many people. It's a very beautiful presence in the room. And I was actually here on Friday, just a few days ago, with a smaller group of practitioners, and just very lovely to, you know, come from my life and then sit here amidst all of you and just notice the effect of sitting together, how that, you know, sitting with you has a beneficial effect on me. So in England, we don't, at least I've never seen a group of this kind of size. And I know that here in the Bay Area, there are quite a number of groups of this kind of size, of people who really come together to practice the Dharma, you know, wholesome evening. And go into the meditation. And when we go into meditation, or when we start on this spiritual path, we never really know where it's going to lead us. So I understand that this is the more experienced group. So I'm imagining people have been on quite a number of journeys in your path already. So this morning, Anagarika Maria and I, we went on alms round. So every Monday we go on alms. I don't use money. So we live on what we're given. And once a week we take our bowls and we go out onto the street and stand quietly in a place that people can easily walk by and wait for miracles to happen. So today we went, and we live in Sunset District, just one block back from the ocean. So if you know Sunset, it's very ordered, it's very kind of nice and neat. It's a grid system, it's got numbered avenues, it's got alphabetically ordered streets, it's all very nice and neat and clear, you know where you are. So we made our way up to 25th at Irving, where we started our alms round, and we stood for a while on the corner of the street and just stood there for some time, and people looked at us and walked by and sometimes looked a little bit disgruntled. And we stood there for a while, and then we carried on. We walked up a block and we stood for a while there, and people kept on walking by. And with our arms still empty, we walked a little bit further up another block. And then a woman we'd never seen before came along and offered us a large bag of something warm. So we received this food and offered a blessing to her. And then we were moved on a little way further, and then suddenly a whole family came. So we'd met one woman before of this family, and she brought a whole family. They'd all cooked quite a large amount of food. Good, wonderful Thai food, and so wrapped up in little plastic bags like they do in Thailand. And they filled our bowls to overflowing. Fortunately, we had bags with us, so we had to keep taking things out of the bag, putting it out of the bowl into our bag. And this was really wonderful, because as we were standing in the first couple of blocks, I was thinking, well, maybe, you know, maybe today nobody offers us a meal or anything to eat. And suddenly our bowls are overflowing with delicious food, not just any old food, but really good food. And so then we walked a little bit further. We gave a blessing to this family, and they particularly wanted us to remember their mother who was sick. Walked a little bit further, and as we're walking along, we see a man who's approaching us with a plastic bag, and he puts more food into our bowl, some milk, all kinds of things. So we had this kind of little miracle happen as we were walking along Irving today. And so we were quite quickly, our bags were full, our bowls were full, and we made our way back to Aloka Vihara. And since we live very near the beach, we decided we'd walk the last little bit along the beach between Judah and Lawton. And so as I said, you know, in the sunset area, it's all very kind of neat and clear and ordered. And in the city, you know, cities is a human-made experience. It's, everything's come from the minds of humans in a city, pretty much everything. There are trees, but you know, it's all pretty much come from the conceptual mind. It's been thought of, planned, designed, built, beautified, so on. So we went our way through the city, and then we walked onto the beach. And that this particular morning, the tide was very high, and that it was quite stormy. So the ocean was really wild. It was a really wild ocean, and there was just room for us to walk along the edge of the ocean without getting our feet wet, up by the dunes. And both of us had this experience of, my goodness, you know, the ocean was. It was like a raging teaching of impermanence. It was like in every moment it was raging, roaring the words impermanence, impermanence, impermanence. And walking through the city, you know, you really get a sense of being somebody and things and systems and, you know, plans and all this kind of stuff. This is all feels very real. But stepping onto that beach, suddenly all of that was unreal. And there's this sense of the powerful force of nature and the powerful teaching of nature, which is in that context was really almost screaming to us, everything is changing in every moment. So it was quite a almost like a mystical experience walking back along this beach, where the structures and concepts that we can live our life by were just being blown away for that stretch of time. And this was just coming to my mind as I was sitting, and you know how easy it is for us to get locked into a sense of self. I'm sure everybody knows that feeling. And how easy it is to, when that happens, when there is that sense of tension or fullness or trembling, whatever the particular self may be that's arising in this moment, you know, how we take that to really be who and what we are, how that becomes really what we are. And, you know, we start to judge ourselves depending on what we find in this moment. We're feeling a little bit vulnerable, not very confident, then we start to judge ourselves. Oh, you know, you never were any good anyway. You know, you start to enhance a particular sense of self. Or if you're feeling really great, you've had a really great day, been really successful, you know, you start to have fantasies about how much more great you can become. And, you know, so we compound this sense of self. And then we find ourselves locked in it. We find ourselves trapped in being somebody. And there's a comment that Ajahn Sumedho made once that I found very helpful. He said, being somebody, anyone at all, is suffering. Well, that's very true. Anyone at all. Sometimes you think, if I was only like that other person over there, I'd be okay. They're probably thinking the same about you. And it just struck me how, you know, these feelings that arise in us, these senses of self, the contractions, the tremblings, the inflations, the solidity, and the many ways that the sense of self can arise. These are like the waves on the ocean. They appear to be very powerful. And certainly this morning those waves appeared to be very powerful. And if there weren't any surfers out today, it was much too wild a morning. And I'm sure if you got caught in one of those waves, it would feel very, you know, feel like a real wave. You'd feel like you're being crashed by that wave. But once it's done its waving, it's just back into being the ocean. It's indistinguishable from the ocean. So we can learn to relate to these waves of feeling that arise in us, waves of sensation that arise in us and cease in us, waves of sense of self, you know, waves of sense of being a particular person with a particular history. This is also just, it's also, or maybe that's more like a current. You know, this is also just a changing, moving experience. So, you know, when we tighten around that, when we believe in it, then we suffer. And I don't know if any of you have had experience of being on longer retreats where, you know, maybe the story, your story comes up from the past, from childhood or so on, or maybe from work, story comes up and it starts running on, this happened, and then, oh, and then there's that, and then there's that, and you start to kind of see, oh, no wonder, you know, no wonder I'm like this, because there was this whole, all of these things that happened, and you can see yourself in a particular way, and it looks absolutely real. It really was like that. It really did happen like that. Excuse me. And then, I don't know if you've had this experience, but I have, and then suddenly the whole story replays itself, but from a different angle. And it's like, oh, you know, what was all these difficult challenges and so difficult, suddenly is an incredible help and a light and a guide on your path. And it's the same person and the same life and the same life situations, but you're looking at the story from a different perspective. Somebody was recently speaking to me about this and how they were on a longer retreat and they had about 6 different perspectives on the same story came up. And then he realized, well, you know, are any of them the real story? They're just different takes on a story. So starting to look, or continuing to look at this, you know, this sense of me, of person, in a more open way, in a, releasing the grip around our identity and our sense of who we are. Because the more we have a tight hold on the history and on the perspective of who we are, the more we create ourselves again and again in that way. And if we can meet the arising experience of self in the moment, it's just like, you know, being a good surfer. I see surfers every day, so it's like being a good surfer, you know, you get a big wave and then you surf it. You don't become it, you're not drowned by it. You can kind of play with it. You can enjoy it. Let it pass. Or if it's a really difficult one, a really tough wave that's coming, you know, you ride it. And it might be, you know, it might be really hard going, you ride it and then it passes and there's a little bit of calm for a while. So really learning to meet life in this moment and meet it with an open hand, with an open mind. So this is a skill. And, you know, sometimes we might think that we need to be in an open state all the time. And we might see, you know, around here there are one or two people who appear to have that wonderful opening where they can just dwell in a state of being in every moment. And, you know, if we think in that way, or if, you know, I need to just be relaxed and open all the time, then when we're tense and stressed, we think that that's an obstacle to our practice. We think that we can't really practice because we're really tense and identified right now. But actually, this is the place we can bring attention to. You know, we can bring the light of awareness to this experience of being tense and contracted and feeling a really strong sense of self. And just by bringing that attention, we give the possibility for that to begin to unravel and loosen and relax. So we meet, in our practice we meet many characters within ourself, many stories, many histories perhaps. And, we live at Aloka Vihara, and Aloka Vihara, you've probably come across the word Brahma Vihara. So Vihara means like a residence, a place to abide. And Aloka means light. So, the meaning of this is like the light of awareness, bringing the light of awareness to whatever's happening. So even if we're in the darkest mind states, we can bring the light of awareness and mindfulness. I say that from experience, not from a concept. And that light of awareness, it gives us that broader perspective. We're no longer just caught in what's going on in the mind. I was travelling on a plane a couple of months ago and sitting next to a man who was very interested in what I was doing as a Buddhist nun and so on, and I wanted to know about where we were, so I gave him a card and I said it's Aloka Vihara, it means light. And after a while he got a book out of his bag and it was about working with the shadow, and he said, oh, this is what I'm reading. And for a while he kind of was under the impression that the name of this monastery means you just look at everything as light, everything's lovely, and you don't look at the shadow, it's just light. So I had to point out, no, it doesn't mean that. It means the light of awareness, the light that shines on the beauty, on the ugliness, on the perfection, on the dirt, on the garbage, on the roses, shines on everything equally. So this is, when we cultivate this, when we cultivate this awareness, this light of awareness in our practice, then, we're no longer having to bargain with ourselves or try to create ourselves to be a certain way. And that's not to say that it's okay to just be a heartless, brutal person or anything like that. I don't feel that there's anyone here like that. So, it's not to say that you can just do whatever you like. The five precepts are a wonderful support in practice. But it's saying that we don't have to keep polishing the brick. We don't have to keep trying to make this imperfect person perfect. I like to think of us human beings as we are perfectly imperfect. And that's how we're meant to be. We're perfectly imperfect. And, we bring this clarity to our life. And this light of awareness, it has its own power. So I was also reflecting on how when we start the practice, there's a sense of being somebody, maybe being somebody caught in samsara who's trying to find their way out and wanting to develop a better side of ourselves and move away from those unskillful things we've been doing. And this is really good, this is great when we start. But as we continue in the practice, at least I find, it's less and less about me and more about letting that light of awareness come through. And that in itself kind of informs our life. And when we see the how painful it is to be, for example, to be stingy. When we see the contraction of stinginess, then there's a natural movement towards generosity. Whether that's in physically giving or in, you know, giving the benefit of the doubt or giving a bit more space to someone, you know, it can be a heart's giving. So when we bring awareness to the qualities that are moving us away from awakening, and we know how they feel, I mean, and we feel the kind of, you know, the unsatisfactoriness of them. It might not even be suffering, but it's kind of like, you know, it could be better than that. There could be more openness. There could be more generosity. There could be more trust. And when we feel what's blocking that, what's moving against that, then we just, the heart naturally starts to align with what is true and what is open and what is awake. So this practice of awareness, bringing awareness to anything that we find in this moment, here and now, this is very powerful. Transformative practice. It's a liberating practice. And it's very simple. It takes a little reminder to put your attention in the right direction, to not get caught again in that story or that judgment or that fear. But it's very simple, very accessible to anyone. Anyone who's not completely crazy. And even if you're a little bit crazy, that's okay. I knew an old woman who lived in the monastery when I first lived there, who was quite seriously schizophrenic, and she was able to quite a large degree practice mindfulness and awareness with her illness, with her craziness. So, I might have told this story before, but she was very, very extremely schizophrenic and had very extreme bouts of delusion. But she also had a very deep faith in the Triple Gem. And when she died, she lived in the monastery for about 8 years. And when she died, she was surrounded by the monastic sangha. We were all around her bed, and chanting her favourite chants. And her last breath was on the last word of the last chant. So, you know, you can bring awareness to almost anything. And it's very powerful and transformative. So, you know, if you feel that you're one of those people who is never really going to get enlightened, or really can't really do the practice, or one of the majority of practitioners who say, well, I'm not really mindful. You know, just keep bringing awareness to whatever arises, whatever it is. And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid with what you find. Don't be afraid if you find things you don't really want to look at, or that appear to be really scary or too wonderful. Stay grounded in the body. The body is our place of grounding, and open to what's happening. You know, allow it to wash through another wave. You know, we can make the practice very difficult or very simple. I go for the simple option myself. And it's always applicable here and now. And again we forget, and again we forget, and again we forget. And then we remember. And that's a wonderful moment. That's not a moment to then criticize yourself for all the times you've forgotten. It's a moment to say, ah, here I am, here it is, presence. What a wonderful opportunity. So one moment of mindfulness is worth 1,000 lives lived mindlessly. One moment of mindfulness is opening the gates. Is opening us back to our true nature. So treasure each moment. Treasure each moment of mindfulness, of presence. Even if what you're mindful of is painful feeling or doubt, confusion. Mindfulness of confusion leads to a lessening of confusion. So whatever we find here in this kind of mixed bag of humanness, you know, just bring this great light of awareness, bright light of awareness. It will be what frees the heart and mind. And I've always been really encouraged that in the suttas, when you know read about these different arahants, fully enlightened ones, that they're not all the same. They're not all just, you know, really lovely, radiant, brilliant beings. They're quite different characters. They come in all different flavours. So, you know, we don't have to make ourselves into being somebody else, but we transform what we have into the beautiful vessel that it can be. So the Buddha said everything we need for enlightenment is in this body, in this fathom-long body, it's translated, in this body here. Everything we need is right here. We're always looking outside ourselves for the way. And everything we need is right here. So it's remembering to turn back to what we find here. This body, these feelings, these sensations, these thoughts, these perceptions, these sense experiences. You know, they are all arising and ceasing within the light of awareness. So this is our potential to be the great ocean rather than one wave after another crashing and falling. We can be the depth and the turbulence and the vastness of the great ocean. So I'd like to offer that for reflection this evening. So there's time for questions, if anyone has a question or two. Somebody at the back there.
Thank you very much for your talk. I got quite a lot out of it. I haven't been here for quite a long time. I'm trying to get back into my practice with mindfulness because of intense anxiety and fear. And I wake up at night and my heart's pounding and my mind starts searching for whatever it is that I'm supposed to be so afraid of, and it's very draining. And so I have faith, because so many people have gone along this path before, that it's certainly going to help me also.
Great.
When you talked about the self, what surprises me sometimes is when I hear, when you know, we have our own version of what happened in our childhood, and then I hear my sister describe exactly the same incident, and it's just a totally different experience.
Mm-hmm.
So much of this is that we carry is like heavy suitcases of our own thoughts about our image and who we were and the mistakes we made, and it's like heavy, heavy luggage that we carry around all the time.
Mm.
Thank you very much.
It's tiring, isn't it? It's tiring carrying it around. Yeah, thank you. I just would like to say, although you didn't ask a question, I would just like to say about with the anxiety. You know, when you wake up at night with that heart pounding, you know, see if you can put your mind onto, say, thoughts of loving kindness, particularly towards yourself. Thoughts of like, may I be well, may I be peaceful, may I be free from all suffering, rather than looking for what's making the fear. Actually, turn to loving kindness, because that has the opposite effect of fear. So fear has the effect of contracting, making a very strong sense of separate self. That's the nature of fear. And loving kindness, it has the nature of opening, calming, and having a sense of interconnection. So I'd recommend in your daily life, you know, to cultivate the sense of, even you can think of breathing in, taking in from the atmosphere, loving kindness. So I always like to think that it's actually inherent everywhere anyway. It's just that we think ourselves into being separate beings. And then we become blocked off from this natural flow of loving kindness. So we can kind of breathe it in our daily life, at work, walking down the street, in very ordinary times, not just sitting on the cushion. So then we start to have this kind of resource of loving kindness within us, within our own heart. And that can be a real support for with anxiety and fear, and start to break down that sense of separate self that needs to defend itself, and bring more of a sense of interconnectedness. Yeah.
Hi. I have a question about being more grounded in the body and actually physical sensations. Like sometimes all of a sudden I'm like, not gagging, but a little bit like, ooh, my saliva. You know, you're so into that one part of the breath and stuff about just being grounded in other parts of the body.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes.
Sometimes I go, oh, am I really here? Oh, let's wiggle my fingers, or let's, you know, remind myself where I am.
Yes, it's something I had to work at quite a lot, actually, because I tended not to want to be in the body. I could find much more pleasant states somewhere out there. But it's definitely very important to develop a sense of real, you know, the whole body sitting. So for myself, always when I start to meditate, I begin by feeling the weight of the body sitting on the seat. So there's a sense of, like, contact. I've arrived here. I'm not somewhere else. Here, you can feel it. You can do it right now. We can all do it right now. There's the direct experience of the body in contact with the floor or the chair or whatever. There's a warmth. So kind of starting the meditation with a sense of connection, gravity. You can feel the weight of the body. So I always begin with that. I think if you're a depressive type, then maybe it's not so good to do that, because it'll bring you more down. But if you're a little bit tend to go out there, then it's very helpful. And it's also very good to do body sweeping. So, you know, if you practice mindfulness of breathing, then that's one method. But then there's also, I would suggest, if it's difficult to get a reading on the body, let's say, then to spend one meditation just simply sweeping through the body and going through the different parts of the body, right the way through, and keep doing that sweeping through the body through a whole meditation. So you really start to feel grounded in the body. And then as you develop that sense, more sense of awareness of the body, then you find that it's easier to have a sense of like that the mind can embrace the whole body sitting. And so you have the experience of the body sitting, and then within that body, the breath. So it's like the awareness expands. But if you don't have a very good reading on the body in the first place, then you need to just really work at that, develop that sense of body awareness through body sweeping.
Because I do that often, that I'm smiling at different parts of my body and stuff, but you're right, I just do it one time, and maybe it's just not enough.
Try one sitting. Try a whole sitting with it, yeah.
The whole time.
Try it, yes.
Say that. Put that on the microphone, please. Say that
into the microphone. A Toyota Matrix is about to be towed across the street.
Sorry to hear that. So we have time for one more question. Yes.
Thank you. I'm also new here, and I'm new to meditation.
Okay.
And I'm also newly married, and when I started to consider pursuing meditation and coming here, I think my partner, I felt hesitation from her, and so it's been a few weeks now, and we finally had the conversation, and she said that her hesitation is because her understanding of Buddhism is a sense of detachment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think maybe she expects for me to cultivate some element of detachment mm-hmm. that might lead to detachment in our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And the part that she loves about me most is how excited I can get mm-hmm. when I really enjoy something. So, and I really love that about me too.
That's nice to hear.
And so I guess I hope that practicing mindfulness doesn't necessarily mean that part becomes tempered. Could you help me understand that better? Thank you.
Yes. I think this word detachment is a really not a very good English word, actually, because it tends to have a sense of like being dissociated, rather. And that's not, you know, the Buddha wasn't in any way dissociated and was very present and actually very engaged being. So who did enormous amount of work and walking and travelling and had a huge impact on the world and still does. So it's not about becoming like a bland person, you know. But mindfulness is about having a choice. So it's like when we're not mindful, we're just acting out of habit. We act out of our conditioning and we're just, you know, we're doing things the way we've done them before or we know or we feel spontaneously we want to do. And we might not have any choice over that, or very much choice, because we're not really aware. And when we practice mindfulness and awareness, then we see and know what's going on. We can be aware of what's happening. So if an impulse arises, we might even be with that arising of the impulse, might even know what that feels like. From a more of a quiet place to suddenly, whoom, this impulse comes, I want to do something. And then there's a choice, so you can see, well, what is it like to not follow that? You know, and then you can be with that whatever feeling that arises through that, or oh, there's that feeling to do something excited or good or whatever. So I'm going to go with that, and then you stay present. You're still there is mindfulness awareness with that, with the next part of what you do, and then there's also awareness of the consequences of that. So it's like you're seeing more directly your manifestation in the world and the way your mind creates the world you live in, basically, simply put. So you're seeing that rather than... And then when you see it so clearly, then you have a little bit more choice over how you do things. You're not just impulsively reacting. But it certainly doesn't mean that you have to become an aloof kind of floating around on a lotus leaf. You know. People often comment with the nuns, actually, because we all shave our head and wear the robes and live in a monastery. And in England, there's only a few of us here, but we're still quite strong characters. But in England, you know, people often comment on, gosh, the nuns, you know, they all kind of shave their heads, but they're really strong characters. It's like the character comes out more because you're not having to kind of try and make yourself into anything. You can allow it. You can allow your particular way to be, but you're allowing it with mindfulness and presence. And in that, there can be more of an emptiness, but it's not an emptiness that's kind of hollow, but it's an emptiness of grasping, identifying. So it's like you can allow it, you can allow yourself, or this particular character, to manifest in the world. I like to think of us as instruments. It's like we're all these different instruments, and some people are trumpets, and some people are cellos, and some people are flutes, and... You know, there's, and we all have our different ways of manifesting the world. And it's not that we have to, you know, try and turn a flute into a cello, but we let that empty space make the beautiful sound that can come into the world, or the life that manifests. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. And it is true that for some people a deep dispassion arises in practice, and you can't know. Like I said, the spiritual journey, it's a bit of an act of faith. You never really know when you start where it's going to take you. So, I mean, I could never have imagined I would end up being a nun living in San Francisco, for example. But that's what happened. So, and, you know... That's the risk, actually, one takes when one starts to practice. And you know, one of the monks who's lived at Amravati for a long time, he says, every meditation is an act of faith, because you never know where it's going to take you. You never know where it's going to take you. But if you're practicing in the right way, then it'll take you into more and more freedom. So you don't really need to worry. Yeah. And you know, you're married, and you're newly married, so there's certain commitment there. So just like I'm a nun, and I have a certain commitment to being a nun, and sometimes I might want to not be a nun, even just for a week, you know. But I've got a commitment to being a nun, so you know, so that's my life happens within that framework. And if I want to, you know, I could leave it, but actually I love it, I value it, it's great, and there's more good to it than there is difficult. So, you know, that's the framework within which this spiritual practice happens, and you're married, and that's your commitment. So your spiritual practice happens within that framework, and your marriage is part of your practice. You know, and there'll be times when it's really, really nourishing and wonderful, and times when it's really challenging. And that will be part of your practice. Your partner is your teacher in a way. So yeah, I wish you every blessing. Yeah. So it's 9:00. If we could just, I hope it's okay to just go a minute over time. Sorry, I'm a very bad timekeeper. If we can just sit for this last minute. And really bring to mind the goodness of your practice, the blessings of your practice, even if they might seem really tiny. Bring them into your heart. Just let them, that recollection, nourish your heart. So the punya, you might have heard the word punya, which means like the goodness or the blessings of your practice. It's a quality. Just bring that to heart. and share the punya, the goodness of your practice with those who are dear to you, your teachers, your loved ones. And keep sharing with all the many people you don't really know, or maybe you know a little bit, or the billions of people in the world you don't know, the creatures, the trees, plants, fruits. Keep sharing with those people you have difficulties with, you have unresolved issues, resentments, regrets. Whether you know them or whether they're figures in politics or whatever. Sharing the blessings of your practice. Letting that spread out across this whole world, this whole planet Earth. That in any way you can benefit, be a blessing to this Earth. Offering up that possibility, opening up that possibility. And coming back to your own heart, remembering to keep nourishing this heart, nourishing it with the practice.